The rain has gone, the weather has cooled, we're in the midpoint of November, and it's Friday. So it could be a lot worse, right? Let's go through what the weather's going to be like for the next couple of days. Highs today, first all of 72, first of all 77 tomorrow, Sunday 79, warms to the 80s on Monday. But then by next Wednesday, it cools off, and Friday, get ready for this, next Thursday night, Friday, a week from right now, you're going to be talking about lows in the mid-40s and high temperatures only in the 60s, which probably, to our next guest, seems like a typical summer day. But for us here, we're getting excited. Don Leonard is our guest, assistant professor of practice in city and regional planning at The Ohio State University. How you doing, Don?
I'm doing good, Tommy. How are you doing?
I'm all right. What's it like in Ohio, in Columbus today? All right, in Columbus, I guess, huh?
I'm in Columbus. Yeah, it's cloudy and chilly. Those numbers already sound pretty good to me.
And are the Buckeyes headed for the national championship? What do you think?
Oh, we're number two. Absolutely.
All right, there we go. Let's talk about, speaking of number two, some of the voters in the election think the economy is like number two. I don't know. You know, I've spoken to a lot of economists throughout the election period. I'm trying to get a handle on if the economy is good, if the economy is bad. It seems as though we have a financial guy on that whenever the numbers come in good, that means bad. But when they come in bad, that means good. Help me understand where the economy is, Don, because I'm confused.
Well, I think you're not the only one, Tommy. There's a lot of data out there to suggest that wages are up, that prices, while they're not down, are slowing down in terms of how fast they creep up on us. Of course, we're talking about inflation there and the consumer price index. Yeah, if you look at the dashboard, you know, I think we see this kind of Wall Street picture that everything looks fine. The problem is when we go to look at Main Street or the kitchen table economics of everyday Americans, we're seeing a really different picture.
What is that picture that we're seeing?
Well, the picture is that folks are spending, you know, 30, 40, 50% of their household income on rent. You know, they're spending, if you've got a kid in daycare, you're spending 25% trying to get coverage for that. You're spending, another 20-so% on your health insurance. When you add all this up, it adds up to a lot more than 100% at the end of every month. And folks are struggling out there.
So when it comes to reasonable expectations after the election, because if people did vote because of the economy and they're angry about it, they want things to change, right? I don't think people just want it to stop in terms of inflation. They want prices to come down. They want things to change or their salary to go up. Unfortunately, economically, if that happens, I think that's just going to fuel further inflation. Could be wrong. I don't know. What are realistic expectations for people that, as you said, they add everything up, it comes out to more than 100%, which puts them in a deficit spending position. And unlike the country, they can't print their own money. Well, they can, but they go to prison.
That's right. Gosh, realistic expectations. I mean, based on the cabinet appointments we're seeing coming out of Washington, D.C. right now, I don't know if anybody can forecast the future. We know that President-elect Donald Trump has promised to dramatically raise tariffs on all our trading partners, and China most of all. The Democrats tried to frame that in terms of a sales tax on the country. I think that there's truth to that. And I think that, when you go into Walmart and checking tags on where stuff is made, you're going to see a lot of made in China. Well, if you start, you know, raising those tariffs 20%, 30% in some cases, you're going to see higher prices. The administration is betting on, or at least this is what they campaigned on, that in the long term, that's going to bring U.S. manufacturing back home and folks are going to have better paying jobs.
But is that likely to happen?
Here's what I don't understand about the policy. If I was a company that was manufacturing in China, and all of a sudden my ability to bring my stuff back into the U.S. Gets a lot more expensive because of these tariffs, obviously an option is to come back home and onshore back in the United States. But there's a lot of other countries out there besides China that have manufacturing capacity and low-cost workers. Why wouldn't they just move to Vietnam?
Well, a lot of that has already happened, has it not, Don, along the Pacific Rim? I remember having this conversation 8 years ago with somebody where because of changes in China, tariffs, what have you, or the price of labor going up and an improving standard of living in China, that it's moved along the Pacific Rim. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. You know, so I think the administration that's coming in is playing checkers with the global economy, and the global economy is more like three-dimensional chess. You know, it's got a lot more axes of movement there, and I think it's naive to think that by just pulling this one lever, we can go back to the 1950s and 60s when, you know, a person with a high school degree could make a living wage for their family.
I think everybody wants things to go back. Well, not everybody, because, you know, there were societal changes in the 50s and 60s, but everybody has
you
this
bet.
Glorified memory of, you know, the golden times that they see in movies where Main Street USA and the Walgreens was on the corner drugstore, the doors were wide open, and you could walk down the street. And I think they have a vision of that happening again, and that's not going to happen. I want to play this for you real quick, and you can comment on it when we come back. This is from 1980, talking about everything old is new again. 624, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Don Leonard, assistant professor of practice and city and regional planning at The Ohio State University. A text comes in. Can't help but wonder if Kamala would have won with the radio conversation this morning, still be scrutinizing new policies or praising them. Oh, man, you caught me. You got me. You got me dead to right. Yes, the conversation would be the same conversation we've been having for the last 6 months. And I don't know if you just tuned in the radio or not. Go back to your echo chamber. Have a blast. I'm not in the mood today. Don Leonard, let's talk about tariffs. The inside joke of that from Ferris Bueller's Day Off is that was Ben Stein, who was a Nixon speechwriter and an economist that delivered that line as the teacher. Talk about tariffs, if you would.
Yeah, so tariffs is this idea that you can incur pain on your trading partners in the short term by making it harder for them to sell products in your market and make your consumers happy. But in the medium term, what a lot of folks don't realize is that our trading partners can raise tariffs as well. You know, a lot of the manufacturing that happens in places like North Carolina for things like furniture, they lost all their like high volume, you know, Walmart type furniture. They're doing high end furniture now, and their number one consumer base is the, you know, 1.2 billion Chinese consumers. So you start, you know, a tariff war with China, and all of a sudden your tariffs are going to start going up as well because they're going to retaliate.
Wait, so the North Carolina furniture manufacturers make high end furniture, but not for people here, for people in China that can afford it?
Well, they make it for people everywhere, but, you know, as somebody once said, if you figure that maybe 25% of a society is profoundly gifted, China has more gifted people than we have people. It's a very large market. So when we start cutting off Chinese imports into the U.S., guess what they're going to do?
Yeah. Talk about the vibe session, if you will, please.
Yeah, so I think maybe a little bit to your skeptical listeners' text. You know, I think the Kamala Harris administration was taking a little bit of the same medicine that our consumer price index data would suggest, which is that everything looks good. We have some improvements to make in terms of, you know, prices at the grocery store and housing, and she had policies for that. But fundamentally, the establishment Democrats believe that the economy is on the right track, that it's never been stronger, and they think this is just a vibe session. They just think that voters were somehow hypnotized into thinking that everything sucks now and it used to be better 4 years earlier.
I think everybody always feels that, don't they?
Well, what's fascinating when you look at the data on like consumer sentiment, Tommy, is that it's incredible. If you're a Democrat, you feel better about the economy when Democrats are in office and vice versa. But what we can see is this overall trend that's going down. You know, when you look across all Americans in 2019, right before the pandemic clamped down on us, 50% of Americans described their household financial situation as good or excellent. By the election year here, 2024, that had fallen to 41%. So a lot fewer Americans think that their household finances are in good shape now than they did 4 years ago. That's not a vibe session.
Let me ask you this. It seems as though the cart has now been placed before the horse, in that instead of the economics of the country driving politics, the politics are driving the economics. And what I mean by that is, if 4 years from now prices go up, people that voted for this administration, and I hope to God the prices come down, but if they go up, they're going to explain it away for one reason or the other and blame it on somebody else. Conversely, even if the prices do come down, the Democrats are going to explain it away on something else and not give the Republicans credit. Accurate or not?
No, I think that's true. You know, the spin rooms are alive and well on both sides of the aisle. I think the scary thing for me is that who do they blame? You know, we already are being told that that, you know, on the left, it's Bernie and his war against the billionaires. On the right, it's Donald Trump and the war against immigrants and the Chinese as being the ones to blame for our lot in life. But, you know, the simple fact is, when economic times get hard, people look for scapegoats, and that starts getting into some scary territory. You ran that clip about U.S. Economics going into the 1930s. There was a lot of global economics going on at that point as well. And when prices start going up, you start seeing really scary stuff in the political side.
And people lose sight of the fact that instead of getting caught up in all of that, the main concern is just putting groceries on the table. That's all we're looking for, right? To feed our families, go on a vacation every now and then?
Absolutely. Americans work so damn hard, and they're just trying to get a living wage for themselves and, you know, a fair shake for their kids.
That's all we're looking for. Thank you, Don. Appreciate your time. Dr. Don Leonard, Assistant Professor of Practice in City and Regional Planning at The Ohio State University. Go Buckeyes. I'll say that because LSU beat Ohio State for national championship not too long ago, didn't we? Yeah. 6:30, we'll talk to Jeff Palermo about LSU when we come back. Right now, time for WWL First News. It all happens tomorrow. LSU taking on the Florida Gators. I guess I should tell you first that it's 6:44, 16 till 7, Friday morning, November 15th here at WWL. Just a beautiful morning. 56 degrees outside, going up to only 72 tomorrow. LSU taking on the Gators at the Swamp in Florida. I don't know if a cold front will have reached there by then or what kind of temperatures they'll be playing in. Our coverage starts at 10 a.m. Tim, can you look that up, please? Thank you. Coverage starts at 10 a.m. with Mike Dettelier and Herb Tyler, former Tiger quarterback. Always great perspective from both of them. Doors open at 11 o'clock at Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge for the Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show presented by MAP Construction. Before that, just head out to Acme Oyster House and hang out outside of the window like they do for the Today Show. It's always a great time with Mike and Herb. Acme has 16 surround sound TVs, great drink specials. Life's more fun with seafood. So hang out and watch a game there. You can catch LSU's pregame at 12:30. Kickoff with Chris Blair and Jacob Hester at 2:30. Tigers Gators tomorrow on WWL. And a free Odyssey app, supposed to be 70 and sunny in the Swamp tomorrow. So pretty much ideal conditions. Jeff Palermo joins us now. WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network news director, and our good friend. How you doing, Jeff? Jeff, you got me muted? Jeff, you on a headset?
How you doing, Tommy? How you doing?
Come in, Jeff.
Hey, Tommy, 10-4. Can you hear me?
10-4, over and out. Hey, tell me about LSU and Florida.
Well, obviously, it's a game for both teams that are trying to get a win, right? They've lost, each of them have lost a couple games in a row. Florida had a really difficult stretch there, having to play Georgia and Texas in back-to-back games. I think most teams that would play those two teams in back-to-back weeks would end up losing. And in the process, Florida lost its starting quarterback. They had already lost their starter at the beginning of the season, and then DJ Lagway, who is their big-time freshman from Texas, ends up injuring his hamstring in the Georgia game. They got to go to a third-string quarterback, a transfer from Yale, who is very limited. And Florida really just got beat pretty bad last week in Austin, losing to Texas. And then we all know about what happened to LSU. I mean, it's just amazing, Tommy, how this season – I don't want to say it's spiraled out of control, but just how it changed when you go back to where you were at halftime of that Texas A&M game. You're up by 10 points. Mm-hmm. Garrett Nussmeier is, you know, looking like a Heisman candidate out there. He's thrown for over 200 yards against the Aggies. Shut down Texas A&M's offense. And you know, one interception leads to a quarterback change for the Aggies, and all of a sudden the season has gone downhill here. But this is a chance for LSU to get it right, get back into the win column. This is a Florida team that has been ravaged with injuries, not only at the quarterback position, but the running back position in the defensive secondary. And, you know, LSU is the more talented team, and it's really going to come down to, as long as LSU stays away from the turnovers, you know, Nussmeier takes care of the ball and reverts back to the guy that we saw for most of the season, I think LSU should win this game.
You know, I don't know if it's the election aftermath or what, but it seems like that Alabama game was a month ago, doesn't it? At least
yeah,
to me it does.
Maybe so. It seems like it's been a long time since LSU's won a game. You know, that's for sure. And it has been, because you had the A&M game, and then you had the bye, and then Alabama loss. And, you know, this LSU football program just doesn't have too many, you know, two-game losing streaks. So it's really the biggest, I would say, the biggest adversity point since Brian Kelly's been here. There's been questions about the program and your questions about, you know, whether you should be benching your quarterback. These are things that Brian Kelly really has not had to address since being here at LSU. So it's really time for LSU to respond. It's time for Nussmeier to respond. And again, you're going up against a team that's not very good defensively, has trouble. You're not, you know, even if DJ Lagway plays, and he is expected to play, he's expected to start. Billy Napier, the Florida head coach, announced it last night on his coach's show that Lagway will play. I can't imagine he's going to be that mobile out there. This was a guy 2 weeks ago in that game against Georgia that was taken off on a cart. And so I don't expect him to be just, you know, doing his best Jalen Milroe impersonation against LSU's defense. So this is why I call this a get right game for LSU to you know, get back on the stable footing, get a win under its belt, and then really try to finish it off with two games at home, and see what 9-3 gets you when it's all said and done.
He is a sizable feller, 6'3", 225. What was the injury, do you know?
He had a hamstring injury.
Okay.
Hamstring injury.
And yeah. He's playing hurt, basically, is what we're saying.
He's playing hurt. And again, it's surprising. You know, when you saw him get hurt against Georgia, you said, well, okay, looks like, you know, he's not going to be available for LSU. But it is because he was carted off the field. And again, usually guys that are carted off the field with a leg injury, you know, first of all, it's usually a knee injury, of course, or an ankle or something like that. But when you're talking about a hamstring injury, those are things that are, you know, 4 or 6 weeks. But here he is. He's back 2 weeks later.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. With all that being said, LSU just a 3.5-4 point favorite, which kind of gets my attention because usually they know some. I know you got a story you just posted about Brian Kelly and Garrett Nussmeier. We'll talk about that as well. Jeff Palermo, you can find his article at WWL.com, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network news director. More about the Tigers and the Gators when we come back. 6:51 now, 9 till 7. Traffic on a beautiful Friday morning on WWL. All right, 6:56 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network news director. I was saying the other day, Jeff, I think Garrett Nussmeier's problems, I don't think it's a mechanics problem. I think the problem is between his ears. Thoughts?
Well, and I think another thing that Brian Kelly brought up this week is that because of the lack of a running game, and actually, he's obviously said it more than once, not just this week, but because of the lack of a running game, he's going out there feeling like he's got to do it. You know, he's putting more pressure on himself. And especially you go back to that interception he threw to begin the second half against Alabama. You know, there's just no faith in the running game once they get inside the 20-yard line that they can hand the ball off a couple times and get the ball across the goal line. So he's got to go out there and make a play, and he's got to feel like, hey, I got to, you know, I see this window here in the end zone. I'm going to try to thread the needle and get the ball to my receiver and score a touchdown. And, yeah, I think just the lack of a, a true running game has just it's just kind of spiraled into the issues now with Garrett Nussmeier.
It's a great point. Let's talk about your story here. I'm looking at WWL.com. Here's what has to happen for LSU to reach the SEC title game. And really,
yeah,
it's not that far-fetched. Do you want to take us just through this weekend?
Yeah, well, you know, this weekend, I mean, LSU, you're right. I mean, it's just they got to win, you know, just a simple amount of – or obviously, first of all, LSU's got to win its final three games, right? I mean, for this to happen. But then when you look at what has to happen beyond that, really all the game it would basically be all the teams that are favored are supposed to win. And so for this week, LSU fans need to be rooting for Texas to beat Arkansas, which is most likely going to happen. Georgia has to beat Tennessee. Now, that's kind of a
– That's the only one that worries me.
Yeah, that's a toss-up game, no doubt about it. And then South Carolina has to beat Missouri. But then even when you look beyond that, Tommy, A&M's got to beat Auburn. Ole Miss has got to beat Florida. That should happen. Missouri's got to beat Mississippi State. That should happen. Alabama's got to beat Oklahoma. That should happen. Texas has to beat Kentucky. That should happen. And then you go to the final week, Ole Miss should beat Mississippi State in the Egg Bowl. Alabama should beat Auburn in the Iron Bowl. Missouri should be favored to beat Arkansas, but that's another toss-up game. And then Texas beats A&M and Tennessee beats Vandy. So certainly not out of the question, but it is November, Tommy, yeah. And strange things certainly happen in November and games, and we've already seen
and have happened already
in the SEC.
Exactly. First thing LSU got to do is win out. That's the first thing they got to do, and Georgia's playing Tennessee between the hedges, not at Rocky Tap, but Tennessee's got a hurt quarterback, I think, so we'll see how it unfolds. Thank you, Jeff Palermo. Have a great football weekend. WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network news director. When we come back, we're going to spend an hour talking about the special session and looking at both sides of it with Jan Moeller, Invest in Louisiana, Aaron Bendeley, Pelican Institute, and more when we come back.